I think it's going to be six, still six, even with the open position. Three. Four, five, six. We have six.
Have six, okay.
Seven. We have seven.
Second page. Okay. Need to get start the recording.
We are recording.
We are? Okay. Great. All right. I will call it to order then. We'll start with introductions. My name is Ryan Wilson with Wilson Architects.
Mike Odering, McKay Esposito.
Eric
Dan
Molino,
Weisner,
SG
Songbird
Engineering.
Homes. Dan Weisner, Songbird Homes. Sorry
Hi.
about that, Eric.
Andrew Gunther with PLS Engineering.
Seth Hauling with AKS Engineering.
Terry Wallum, Wallum and Associates.
Okay, and staff members who are on.
April Firth, Director of Community Development.
Brent Davis, Land Use Review Manager and Community Development.
Rod Swanson, Clark County Public Works Department.
Naomi Padibanla with Development Engineering.
Susan Ellinger with Community Planning.
Diana Nutt with Development Engineering.
I'm Melanie Davis with Development Engineering.
Victoria Abram with Building Safety.
Michaela Rankin, Building Safety.
Steve Archer, Clark County Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, Advisor to Community Development Department.
Okay, any other staff? Okay, any members of the public?
Houston Ajo, Ajo Construction.
Trista Kobleski with OTAC. I'm on the agenda, not strictly public.
Okay, welcome.
Brandy McElrock, Quail Homes.
Okay, anybody didn't get a chance to announce themselves? All right. Just a reminder, I didn't hear the automated message. So just as a reminder that this DEEB meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted on the DEEB website. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes from the November meeting?
I have, and they are very detailed. Before I make a motion to approve, is this something that is automatically generated through the recording, or is this something that somebody's taking an hour or three or four to type up? Because it seems to be quite detailed, and I'm not sure if we need to have every single sentence provided that was spoken at the last meeting. I think that these could be pared back. They're minutes. We can always go back and review the audio if we need to do that. So having said that, I would move for approval.
I'd second that.
Okay. Any discussion? Outside of the methodology for the minutes.
I think it's a great point, Mike. All right, thanks.
I know we had some internal staff discussion about the minutes, and we were trying to summarize that bit of it, and I think that it just came to so much back and forth. We didn't want to miss any, and being that we had some staff changes, we're getting adjusted to the minutes and meetings, so we'll try to get them summarized in the future.
Sure. Well done anyway, Michaela.
It was difficult.
Thank you. Yeah, I got a little winded there. It was my first time.
All right.
They do have, you could probably, Microsoft Teams has the Copilot plugin that you can use to transcribe and then summarize meeting minutes.
Yeah, the transcript is really painful to get through, and the summarizing doesn't always pick up what's actually being said. So it's quite difficult to get through these notes, but we do our best.
Okay. Well, we appreciate it.
I think we still need to take a vote. So all in favor of adopting the minutes?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, sounds like the minutes are adopted unanimously. Victoria, do you want to update us on upcoming events?
Sure. For the month of December, it's pretty quiet since most of everything happened this last week. So then December 2nd, they had a public council meeting for the 2025 annual budget, elected officials testimony. They also discussed the Title VI application and service fees, and then a proposal to establish Southeast 356th Avenue as a public road. And then on the 3rd, there was another council meeting for the 2024 emergency budget supplemental and the Northeast St. John's Road Pavement Improvements Project, public use and necessity. They also discussed the 2025 Greater Clark Parks District budget and the 2025 annual budget. And then tomorrow, Friday at 9 a.m., they'll have a council meeting for the Affordable Housing Code Amendments, Land Use Alternatives for DEIS, and the 2025 to 2045 comprehensive plan updates. That is all that is scheduled. And then I also just wanted to clarify, since we had some confusion with the meeting time for the 2025 year due to scheduling conflicts with the room, we had to move the meeting to 2 o'clock to 3:30 p.m. But that will only be for the 2025. This is the last meeting of 2024. So the next one will be January 9th at 2 p.m.
And just to be clear, so starting with that meeting, we can go back to having in-person meetings in the room?
Yes, that was our plan, was to go back to hybrid.
Yeah. Okay. And then it looks like, so other than the affordable or the council meeting tomorrow, there's no more council meetings in December?
There's nothing. I double checked.
Wow.
Yeah.
It looks like there's no PC meetings either.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Member announcements. I guess I'll start. One kind of brought up when we were looking at the quorum, but I believe we have 3 vacancies in terms of new members. Can someone remind me, I meant to go write it down, what the 3 positions that are open are going to be?
No, it was in the minutes. Last month, I think Eric, although it appears he'll reapply, and then I think Jeff Rispin has indicated that he's going to be moving on. I can't remember who the 3rd one was. I'll try to find those minutes in a second here.
Well, I think it was the public agency.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I did submit my letter already. So you should have it.
Jeff is just one of the at-large positions, right?
No, he is a construction contractor. Right. And then Terry was the other one that ends at the end of this year. Terry, are you going to be reapplying?
Okay, I thought I re-upped last year, so I thought my term was still good. I wasn't aware that mine was ending.
Yeah, I don't know as if you were at last month's meeting. I'm looking at the website. I'm looking on the website right now, and it looks like your position expires at the end of this year, along with Jeff and Eric.
Okay. I'll resubmit then for that.
Great.
I know I had reached out to Les, from Clark Regional, and I can follow up with him again. I did that with Seth. So see if he had applied before for the public agency spot.
Okay. And that's when Brian Cast was probably chosen.
Yeah.
All right. And I have reached out to one of my colleagues about the construction contractor position. I don't know if that person is going to be applying or not, but I've sent the invitation.
I was going to say, where do we point them for that application? Because I don't see any application on the website.
I know there's direction in the thing in the newspaper. It mentioned where to send your resume and your letter of interest to. But I, too, am looking on here and don't see any direction for that. Bylaws and advisory board members. Yeah, and one thing that should be updated, though, if we could get that, is that it appears that I still work for Olson Engineering. I haven't worked for Olson Engineering for 2 years, so if we could get that updated to McKay Sposito Incorporated, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, of course. I think the resumes, too, will go to Victoria, and then she can give them as one package to Kathleen.
Right.
Or council.
I think, didn't we send them to Michelle Fenning?
Yes, originally? I can go ahead and put a copy of the press release in the chat of this, which has her contact information there.
Perfect. So do you want people to send these to you or directly to Michelle?
Either one's fine. We're in close connection with it. So if I get it, I'll forward it to her. And if she gets them, she's going to keep them until. And I know for the Clark Regional, we did reach out. I cannot remember the name. And he had applied earlier on, and he's still in the consideration. We do have his information. Okay.
Great.
So it's public agency, construction contractor, and at large are the three that are open?
Yes. But Terry's going to reapply. And private sector professional engineer. There's actually four, three of the current, and then the one at the public agency that's still open. So the only two that are really open are the construction contractor and the public sector professional engineer.
Oh, public sector professional
engineer? Public sector professional engineer, yeah.
So I don't know if anybody has. We don't have an at-large then?
We do. It's Terry. Terry and myself.
I mean, an opening.
No.
We don't have an opening for at large. So the only openings are public agency and public sector engineer.
No, construction contractor and public sector professional engineer.
Okay.
If Terry's going to reapply, then that's not an open position anymore.
If it helps, I can be underneath the construction. We have a construction company, development company. So, I mean, if it helps, I can take that spot instead. And then the at-large one can be available for a wider range of people.
If we can change what your heading is considered under, I think that that would be a question for Ms. Otto as to whether or not you could be shifted in that. I think she's on today's meeting. Kathleen, is that something that can be done? Well, we can. Victoria, can you check in with Kathleen on that and see if that's an option? Because I think it would be easier to fill that at large development work position than it would be a construction contractor.
Yeah, I
please. Yeah, thanks, Terry. That's a really good idea. Did you have your hand up, April? I saw your hand fly up there.
I did. I was just waiting. I was waiting for you guys to. But yes, I have one announcement, almost two. I'm like so close to having some very good news that I want to share. But the first one, I will say this is also good news. I'm excited to share. But I hired an engineering division manager. So think about Greg Schaefer. I didn't hire Greg because he retired, but I hired Melanie Davis, who is coming from the private sector, but does also have some government experience as well. And so she is the new engineering division manager. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Great.
And as soon as I find out that what I think is right about parcel numbers, I can announce that to you too, but give me like 5 minutes.
I remember April, a few meetings ago, you mentioned that the county was in the process of doing a third party review on, was it land use timelines? How is
land
that coming?
Land use and road mods.
Okay.
It went well. She's a state auditor. She's actually done a lot of auditing of those exact processes. She said that our process looked a lot like everybody else's. You know, there wasn't anything weird or not ordinary. But she did give us some pointers about communication so that we can help our timeline and increase communication for the applicant and in between programs, which I think is one of our biggest misses. So where planners will talk to you or engineers will talk to you in emails, and then that always doesn't get communicated back to the other program. So we're going to work on a couple of things there. That was the biggest thing that came up was communication, and that not everybody can see that communication, so they don't know where timelines are. And so I think that if we make a couple of tweaks there, that we should be okay, or we should be improving.
Did they provide a written report?
She did not. I can ask. Oh, actually, I can't ask when she retired. I was going to say I can ask her when she didn't. Yeah, she did not. She gave me the option of having a formal report or spending four more hours with my staff working through some bugs. And so I chose the 4 more hours with my staff and a more informal report to me. But if you want to ask anyone else, there were others and they were actually I wasn't even allowed to be in there. She reviewed it with my staff and Brian Mattson, Marion, Shannon, Michelle Dawson. So that's who she reviewed with my staff. And then Diana, Brent, and I came in for recaps afterward.
Okay. I mainly am asking because since I'm president next year and I'm started thinking about work plans, and it seems like every time we've talked to the counselors that they've permit timelines is something that comes up. So I want to at least keep a pulse on it.
Well, that, so, and we have to, starting January, meet the timelines, because there's a new Senate bill going into effect. So, and then also, just in case you haven't seen it, and it's still a little clunky just because I wanted to get it out there quickly, but on the clark.wa.gov website under community development, the first thing you see is we have a monthly report that's right there that talks about our timelines and how long things are taking. So and basically we're going to have to report that to Commerce. So I thought, since I'm going to have to do that anyway, why not just make it public, out there for the public too. So that's what I planned on using. We make, like, development engineering, even when they were down to engineers, 92% of the time they were making their timelines. So, we watch it in land use, and we watch it in development engineering. Plus, our timelines are actually shorter than what Senate Bill 5290 is requiring.
Right.
So we even have a little bit of leeway there, because we have to make Senate Bill 5290's timelines. So, even with that, I want to get better no matter what our timelines are in code. So.
Yeah. And to qualify that, April, I would assume, just for confirmation, that does not include any project holds initiated by the applicant, correct?
Correct. The second you choose to put it on hold, it becomes applicant time. Yes, because our timelines are based on time with jurisdiction.
Yep.
So once we push it to the applicant, that becomes applicant timelines, or an applicant requests a hold.
And that's the way it is with any other jurisdiction that I've worked in. So.
Yep. Some jurisdictions are contemplating making you sign something, but most 99% of the time when you're asking for that, you're asking in writing anyway in an email, so I'm not too concerned with that.
Yeah, I think on my end, it's primarily just the early issues hold that seems to drag on sometimes, but we can make that part of a next year discussion or something.
Yeah, I think that I would agree with you. I think it needs to be qualified, meaning if there's a big issue during early issues, the road mod that just needs more time or more analysis for staff to be able to write a positive finding of fact, that's understandable. If it's a, hey, by the way, there's this. If it's something that can be turned around in a day or two, I kind of have a little bit of difficulty with staff taking then 14 days after that to review what took me maybe an hour to address. So I think that there's going to be some nuances to that we might want to discuss.
I think. Oh, Brent, go ahead. You're going to say what I was going to say, so you say it better.
Yeah, so the new state statute does not allow for additional staff time after resubmittal. So we are going to be moving forward. We're going to be running the clock when the new submittal comes in. The other thing, I'm working on the implementation piece from the work that we did with the state auditor. And I'm anticipating that sometime either February or March, I'm going to be wanting to get some time on your agenda to go over what we're looking at for implementation. The primary thing is really, I think, being more clear between applicants and staff about expectations when we're requesting additional information. A time frame as to when that's going to be provided, and with the understanding that can always be adjusted, but being very clear about that, because the state statute actually demands that clarity. In addition to that, when you're putting applications on hold voluntarily, We have the authority to condition that hold, and we would be looking again to try and frame timeframes so that things aren't just lingering, because we do have cases where we haven't been diligent in the past that are, you know, can sit for years, and we want to get away from that. So, yeah, hopefully February or definitely by March, I'll be coming to you guys with going over what we're proposing to change because of this work that we've done.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yep. That sounds great, Brett. Yep. I appreciate it. I guess still kind of following up on member announcement stuff, I wanted to maybe just take a little bit of time to debrief about the third-party review we went through last month, not from any issues or items that were in that, specifically in that, but more just from a formatting and process standpoint, just to like get everybody's feedback on how they think it went, how the process went, how it could be better, anything like that. So anybody have some thoughts?
Can you remind those of us that may not remember what you're talking about? Third-party review?
Yes, this was the it was a stormwater question.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah,
and
okay.
Once again, it's my point isn't to rediscuss that topic, but more just in the hope that, you know, maybe going in the future that this is something that continues to be used. How did people feel that the process went?
Looks like Eric has his hand up.
Yep.
Yeah, I see Travis is on here. Maybe we can let him talk about it, but he expressed a little frustration with me that it didn't help at all and he still had to do the same thing, and that stuff, you know, it didn't make a difference having Deeb hear it. But he's on the line if you wanted to say something.
If he doesn't, the only other feedback I would say is that I would, and I said it last time, I would just want to make sure, I think that that it goes through Naomi or Melanie or me or somebody from
Brent?
Public Works.
Ken Leder, April?
Yes.
So by that you mean the request to go to Deeb would go to one of you, and then you would take it to Deeb?
Right, because it does say, I think, in your bylaws that staff will bring it to Deeb.
Right.
It does. And I happen to mention that should be an internal thing that needs to be worked out. But then my concern was, well, how do we make sure that future staff and Deeb members know that that is actually the case? I might suggest that there be an update to our document, an amendment or revision that states that it be senior staff as defined by ... whatever that is, or their actual job titles, so that it can be, it's something that if somebody reads that, then they understand that they just can't ask frontline staff to bring something to Deeb, that it would have to go above up the ladder to a supervisory staff member on that. So then that's something that I could probably do and bring back to the board at the next meeting.
Well, that way,
go ahead.
It brings up sort of the follow-up. I know we had talked about it initially, was, you know, is this something that we should, you know, put on the county's website, that it's a pathway, and have a formal, you know, click here to, or fill out this application and send it to so-and-so if you have that, if you're requesting it.
I think that that's more of a discussion, communication of back and forth between staff and the applicant or the consultant, that's the case. Again, though, the challenge is, and Ollie always brought this up, the challenge is that the general public doesn't know that that's an option.
Right. And that's what I'm getting.
Unless staff brings it to their attention. And so you're right. But I don't know if it's an application sort of process at that time. I think it's more informational that it be on the county's website under the development development engineering webpage or something like that.
If the point is that there's a procedure for submitting the, it has to go to a certain person, and presumably those people are reviewing it for whether or not it's appropriate to bring to DEEB. So, the request has to be made to the right people and contain the right information.
Let's see if let me amend the document. I don't know if we'll probably have to vote on any changes, and then make sure that the counselors are aware of the change, or at least the county manager. And then we can talk about, or maybe staff can noodle a little bit about how best to, or where best to post that information so that others know about it. Because here's the thing, is that 3 years, 5 years down the road, as staff changes, if they're have been to DEEB meetings, how would the newest public works director know that that's even an option without, somebody telling that person? So I would agree, Ryan, that somehow it needs to get out there. The best way to do it, I don't have an idea about that right now, but the website might be an option.
Okay. Yeah, I'm concerned that as of right now, the only people who know that it's a viable pathway are DEEB members and their coworkers. So,
hey, Ryan.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, just as far as feedback on the process, I felt like it could have been a little bit more in-depth presentation in terms of what the issue was. And outlining it a little bit better for the group, having both sides, the applicant or design engineer plus the county's engineer provide a little bit more input on that versus us trying to, glean that from the information, these emails back and forth. And, then it could have been a little bit more where we're a step back and providing, discussion after some of that back and forth happens, and that discussion versus us being in the middle of the discussion between the design engineer and the county's engineer, it felt a little bit like we were kind of in the middle of a mix, kind of a little bit of a dogfight, you might say, to try to come to give our input on it, where if we had everything out there on the table, obviously there's questions that we might have to get more clarification on it. But it, for us to kind of withhold our discussion and opinion until a little bit more toward the end of it.
Yeah, I will say that this would be an advisory to staff. If staff or the county engineer still says that something's required, we can take the feedback as advisory, but it might not change the decision of staff under the county engineer.
And that's what our document states, and the reason why I put that this section in there, that is that it could be part of a finding of fact in the staff report, meaning that when staff writes a finding of fact with an associated condition of approval, if necessary, that the discussion with DEEB took place. This was DEEB's, for lack of a better term, decision. And then staff can, provide their analysis and as to why they arrived at the decision that they did.
Okay, any other member announcements?
I have the one good news.
Oh, good. It came in.
So Yes, it did. So, okay, we've been discussing parcel numbers. I don't know, for a while, mostly with the BIA, and I don't know if you guys have heard it, but so when a plat records, you could have up to 10 days before the parcel number is live in CCLMS. And when we went through when we went through the process with the assessor's office, we found that that was because our GIS was only updating our land management system CCLMS every Sunday night, and only on Sunday nights. Where nowadays, you know, when LMS was put into place, that was standard procedure, but now most programs update every single night. And so they did some testing, and they've been doing it every single night, and it's been working. Now, if something else is trying to update at the same time, it will kick CCLMS off. But in theory, and this is only for our jurisdiction, because I don't know about everybody else's land management system, but in theory, this could save us at very least 5 days for you to get parcel numbers, because CCLMS will be getting GIS updates every single day. So I'm pretty darn excited about that.
Yeah, that is great to hear. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yep. Thank you. All right. Next on the agenda is a follow-up on ecology mandated changes. This goes to Rod.
Hi there. Trista Koblesi from OTAC, and I are here to give you your monthly check-in on the code and manual update. Just as a reminder, there are two things we submit to ecology in spring of 2025. One is how we're accommodating or incorporating the ecology mandated changes that were from the Western Washington manual update in 2024. And a second submittal, which are significant changes that Clark County is making to the code and manual. And last month, I think it was Shannon sent out the mandated changes for you guys to take a look at. And today we're here mainly just to hear any feedback that you might have on those things. So I think that probably would be a pretty short item.
Yeah, this is purely an engineering thing. I sent all of this out to everybody in my organization. I did not hear anything.
Okay.
That was kind of what I was expecting. They are mandated changes. We can't deviate from them. Is there anything else related to the code and manual update that somebody might want to ask a question about or mention?
Hey, Rod, in terms of some of the comments that were provided previously, I know some of those were outside of these 2024 updates, and I believe they still were, you know, you might say above the minimum requirements that the state has. I was just curious if any of those were items that you were able to incorporate into these changes or have looked at.
So there are two change tables. The one that are significant changes the county will make, we're working on that now. There have been accumulated since the 2021 manual was adopted. If there's something specific that you want us to look at, send us an email, send me an email about it. If it's something that was brought up a year or two ago or before that, it should be in the list. And that's about all I can say. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I'll dig into it further here too.
Okay.
I don't remember specifically what they were, but I know there were a few emails that we received in the early part of this process from engineers in the community, might have been you, can't remember, with some specific requests. So if you sent an email, you know, within a few months ago, I believe we will have it in the list that we're currently evaluating now. Not in the list of changes you just saw, but the ones we're working on.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Trista.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that wraps it up.
Very good.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. You bet. Thank you. Next on the agenda is the Affordable Housing Code Amendments update. This Susan. Yep. There you are.
Yeah. Michaela, are you able to share the slides? Thank you. Okay, so for the record, my name is Susan Ellinger, and I'm a planner with Community Planning, and I'm here today to discuss the implementation of Strategy AH1 of the Housing Options Study and Action Plan. Next slide, please. So our agenda for today is just to provide a short overview and background of how we got to this point with the housing project, outline the code modifications that we're recommending, and discuss our findings and recommendations. Next slide, please. So the Clark County Housing Options Study and Action Plan, or HOSAP, was adopted in May of 2022. And the HOSAP identifies housing challenges and opportunities to encourage development of housing that's affordable to a variety of household incomes. It applies to the unincorporated Vancouver urban growth area, which has urban services to support various types of housing. And following the adoption of the HOSAP, the County Council directed staff to begin working on modifications to the code to implement the plan. And the first phase of implementation included code changes that are applicable to middle housing and smaller single family developments. And those were adopted on March 5th of 2024. And the second phase of the project focuses on multifamily and regulated affordable housing. And that's currently in process. And the project we're here to discuss with you today, it pulls a single strategy from the phase two work for implementation now. Next slide, please. So the project focuses on HOSAP strategy AH1, and this strategy aims to expand potential development options for affordable housing projects by allowing them to be located in the commercial and mixed-use zones. The strategy suggests that allowed residential uses should meet a certain affordability criteria, and based on the strategy language, we develop draft code. Next slide, please. So in the draft code changes, we're proposing to add language to the commercial and mixed-use zones that would allow affordable housing projects with no associated commercial use if certain criteria are met. And those are criteria are that the project's located in the Vancouver urban growth area, that the applicant submits evidence prior to certificate of occupancy of an executed long-term restrictive covenant. This ensures that the units will remain affordable. And in this case, we're requiring 30 or more years for that covenant. And the third criteria is that 100% of the units are provided at an average of 60% or less of area median income, or AMI. As outlined in the HOSAP, AMI is the midpoint of a region's income distribution. So half of the families in a region earn more than the median income and half earn less than the median. And these income levels are a way to assess housing affordability. Next slide, please. So at the work session with the Planning Commission on November 7th, members raised questions about the amount of commercial and mixed-use property that could be developed with residential uses. In response, staff worked with the County GIS Department to put together the information that's shown on the screen. The table shows the number of acres and units developed with multifamily projects and no associated commercial use in the commercial and mixed-use zones in both the county and City of Vancouver, just the county jurisdiction. The Planning Commission asked for information about the City of Vancouver, which is on the next slide, because the city adopted a similar code change in 2019. So for the county, we only looked at projects in Highway 99 because that's the only place where residential is allowed without commercial use. And the table here shows that within Highway 99, there's 458 acres zoned commercial and mixed use, 111 acres are vacant or underutilized, and 4.45 acres and 73 units have been developed with no associated commercial use. And that equates to about 4% of the vacant and underutilized land. So there are other multifamily projects that have been gone through the county review process or constructed that are on commercial or mixed use parcels, including one Vancouver Housing Authority project, but all of those have some sort of commercial component. Next slide, please. So this slide shows a list of multifamily projects on commercial and mixed use zone parcels with no associated commercial use in the city of Vancouver. And this was provided by city staff. These five projects that are listed include a total of about 10 acres and 326 units. And as you can see, similar to the county, there are a relatively low number of projects and acres that have been developed using the city exemption since its adoption in 2019. Next slide, please. So in addition to the review of the projects, we wanted to point out some findings that have been made as part of the work that's being completed for the comprehensive plan update. And as a part of the vacant buildable lands work that has been done in the past few years, it was recognized that we are beginning to see commercial land being developed with multifamily units because of things like the City of Vancouver's Affordable Housing Code exemption that was approved in 2019, the allowance of multifamily development as a permitted use in areas like Highway 99 and in the City of Vancouver's CX zone, and also as a part of integrated mixed-use developments. So therefore, the model includes an assumption that a portion of commercial lands will be developed with non-commercial uses. And this is based on information from the City of Vancouver and development trends that they have experienced. And as we've already begun doing, these assumptions will be monitored and updated to reflect any changes in the development that actually occurs. Next slide, please. So why are we proposing that this change go forward now? The first reason is that the phase one code changes required additional revisions and were delayed past the original expected implementation date. And because of that work, phase two was paused while phase one was completed. And we're currently working on phase two, but we're unsure of when it will go through the review process. Part of that reason is because depending on the specific provisions, which may include comprehensive plan changes, we may need to couple phase two with the 2025 comprehensive plan periodic update. And that is not anticipated to be completed until December of 2025. So as an alternative, adoption of the proposed amendments to implement this single strategy now would have an immediate impact on addressing the affordable housing crisis that our county is facing and allow affordable housing developers to leverage funding sources, including the Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program. And this will immediately accelerate critically needed affordable housing, help address one of our region's biggest impediments to affordable housing development, and make long-term affordable housing development proposals more competitive. Next slide, please. So I also wanted to note that there's another strategy in the HOSAP that considers allowing residential development for all income levels in the commercial and mixed-use zones. Strategy HO21 will remain as a part of phase two and will be considered with future code updates. It includes concepts such as reducing the ground floor commercial requirements, allowing for active ground floor uses like community spaces or plazas to meet the commercial requirements, and permitting alternative configurations of commercial and residential spaces. Next slide, please. As a part of the review process for these proposed amendments, public involvement for this item included submitting to the Department of Commerce, issuing a SEPA DNS, and publishing the DNS and legal notices for the Planning Commission and County Council hearings in the Columbian. The Technical Housing Code Forum is a group of industry professionals made up of participants of the original project advisory group for the HOSAP, DEEB, and the Planning Commission. And the forum holds public meetings and gives feedback regarding the housing code implementation. The forum discussed all of the strategies in phase two, which included strategy AH1, until it was recently identified for separate implementation. Next slide, please. So in the Planning Commission recommendation to council, there's a finding that the proposed changes better implement state law, including RCW 3670A020, the comprehensive plan, countywide planning policies, housing element goals and policies, and the Clark County Code to plan for and accommodate housing affordable to all economic segments of the population. Based on this finding, staff is recommending approval of the code changes. Next slide, please. So this shows a little bit about the timing of and the process that we followed. The project was discussed at council time on October 30th. A Planning Commission work session was held on November 7th. Hearing with Planning Commission was held on November 21st. We're speaking to you today. And we're going to County Council tomorrow, December 6th. Next slide, please. So that's the formal presentation, but I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Susan. Quick question. It's the AH1, you noted it's only for projects located within the Vancouver urban growth area, which I guess the implication is that it's not available to other urban growth areas. Is that just because Vancouver has a corresponding code pathway for this type of use?
No, I think it's primarily just because the entire HOSAP was focused on the VUGA and those are the areas that are best set up for this type of development.
So is there a geographic area of the Vancouver UGA? It's not just all of incorporated Clark County, because the map you showed originally, I've got it actually pulled up here. The map shows.
Can you go to the third slide, Michaela?
Yeah, so that's the area that we're discussing, right?
Correct.
Oh, okay, great. And then how does the low income part of that translate into rent price? Is there some sort of metric that says that if somebody's below the median whatever, that they then you can't have rent more than X?
Correct.
And is that adjusted annually?
I believe so. I don't know for sure. Okay. We are proposing this in partnership with Alicia Topper, the county treasurer. And she is more of an expert in some of the funding questions, but I believe for the projects, yes, you know, when someone rents it, they determine their where they are within the area median income, and then they have to keep records of that. The projects would have to meet an average of the 60% AMI. And so, yeah, they would keep track of that.
And then what if somebody has a job that suddenly they get a big promotion, for instance, and their income level goes up past that level? Are they kicked out? How is that done? And maybe this isn't a question for you necessarily, but it's certainly something that if I'm going to be advising, say, my multi-family development clients on, you know, I think they want some assurance that they won't have consistent turnaround, that they'll have, you know, permanent, semi-permanent residents, and that if they, you know, do better in life and they either get a better job or they advance in their current job, that they're not suddenly in jeopardy of having to find a new place to live at a significantly higher rent.
Again, I'll be honest, I don't know a lot of the details of how the housing would be run, you know, post-development, but...
So the only thing I would add, Mike, is so for your first question, HUD updates those figures annually.
Okay.
On this one, yeah, it's that's beyond our scope.
Okay. Sure.
Might be worth talking to VHA. They would probably run into this.
And the incentive for a developer to do this is that they would get the low-income housing tax credit, and that would be part of that program then, right?
Yeah.
Either that program or another program.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, Jose, I didn't mean to jump in.
Good. Any other questions for Susan or anyone else?
Just a comment. I think this is awesome.
That's great.
I think this is on the surface, just having just seen it for the first time. I think that be prepared for like I know maybe some of my clients might say, well, wait a minute. Come on, man. I want to be able to put apartments in commercial zones. I mean, look at that parcel there. It has no public access to the adjacent WDOT right away, for instance. And this is an example that I've been through before. How come we're not able to do that? And you only have to, it has to be low income housing. Well, that's the law that's being created, but you know, somebody might cry foul, just be prepared for that. But I think this is pretty cool. And hopefully some of us here will be able to participate in some of those projects from a design standpoint.
Great. Thank you so much for the feedback. That's great.
I would just comment that, you know, one of the challenges, at least in the city of Vancouver side, has been that the 60% AMI calculation doesn't factor in the type of unit it is. So, and the city of Vancouver has recently kind of adjusted that. So they have different categories, you know, whether it's a studio, one bedroom, two bedroom, or three bedroom unit. But for a while, it felt to me that there were some developers who were kind of taking advantage of it by, you know, putting a bunch of studios out there, which, yes, they were 60% of the AMI, but they were still, you know, $1,200 a month for a studio apartment. Anyway, that's just kind of a comment that I've had through looking at that program, how the cities run it.
Sure. That makes sense.
But I will echo Mike. It's kind of fun to see, because I sat in on some of those early task force meetings. It's kind of fun to see the actual fruit of all that labor coming out.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
Okay, if there's no other questions or comments on that, we'll move to the next item on the agenda, which is public comment. Is there any members of the public who would like to make any comments? I don't see any hands raised. So I will assume that there are none. With that, I will remind everybody that the next DEEB meeting is January 9th at 2 p.m. That will be hybrid format. So I will wish everybody a happy holidays. You guys have a good end of the year.
Indeed. Yeah, thanks. Cheers.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
You bet.
Thanks, Ryan. Same to you guys.
And if anybody sees Jeff, tell him thank you for all of his hard work. I know we've emailed him, but staff as well, just let Jeff know that he's been invaluable to this board as well as the Planning Commission for like the last 80 years or something like that. So.